Welcome to Tabletop Tommies. I'm Johnny.
And I'm Phil.
And in today's episode, following on from Is It Stale, we're talking about ways to keep it fresh. So we'll be talking about all the different ways you can play Bottle Action in a new and exciting way so that you don't get bored of the system. So, should we jump straight in, Phil? What would be your first recommendation?
Topically, it would be playing a new army, which you may or may not have received for Christmas.
Indeed, yeah. Hopefully you're sat cutting all the pieces out for your brand new force.
Surrounded by boxes.
Sticking them all together. You've got the spray paint ready to go. Or airbrush, if you're so inclined, if you got an airbrush for Christmas. Hopefully you did. I always find it really exciting playing with a new army. What about you, Phil? When you start a new army, is it just to keep the game fresh, or is it usually because something's caught your eye?
Normally because something's caught my eye, but it will be fundamentally to keep the game fresh. Because if I end up playing the same army over and over again, I get bored. And if I'm playing people regularly, locally, for example, or at events, they're going to get bored of me playing the same army. So it's a bit of both. But it will be because something has caught my eye, and then I'll plan for it to appear 3 or 4 months down the line. So I'm not going to put myself under pressure to build it and create it and get it all ready, you know, in super quick time. It'll be more a case of looking ahead at what's going to happen over the next year in terms of events that I want to go to and go, right, I'm going to build this particular force or this particular nation, and I'll sort out the actual, you know, structure of it nearer the time. But I'm going to take that nation to that event and plan for it.
Yeah, I really like the pressure of a tournament to get a new army ready. And I think there's both sides of the coin, the competitive players and the narrative players. The new army is a great way to keep you excited, because either you're building it for a very thematic reason, in which case it's really easy to get excited about your new force, or if you are a very competitive player, trying out a new army that doesn't play in the way you've always played is another great way to just get you a little bit excited. Can I do as well with this type of army as I do with this type of army? And so, great shout, new army.
Something we've mentioned in a previous episode was about looking to have maybe some of the minor nations represented in your own, you know, collection of armies. And that I quite like the idea of that, where you've maybe got like one or two armies that you play predominantly, but then you start looking at some of these minor nations and fringe nations and think, oh, actually, it'd be interesting to dive into that, pick up, you know, units that I can build an army out of, and then try running that at, you know, at my club or at events or just, you know, at home with your mates kind of thing.
Yeah. The other thing you could do is, instead of trying a new army, a new nation, you could try a brand new army in terms of a new way to play the game. So we've covered Tank Wars. Mm-hmm. Trying out a Tank Wars game, I think, would be a great way to sort of zhuzh up your club games, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that you don't see very often. And it's an interesting way of playing the game, because you are restricted in terms of what units you can take in a different way. And also, it gets an excuse to get all those, you know, tanks and vehicles off the shelf that you very rarely play with in a, you know, in a standard reinforced platoon type game, and actually start using them.
100%, especially because with that single tank slot, it's very difficult to put in the less good tank. You're always going to be tempted by the slightly sort of bigger template or the slightly better value tank. But if you've got 5 tanks in your platoon, you might as well throw in that Panzer II that really isn't for you most of the time.
I would love to see somebody take a Panzer 1, 2, 3, 4, and then the Panther.
It is on my bucket list, isn't it?
Yeah.
So far I've got the 3, 4, 5. I just need the 1 and 2, and I'm good to go. And the best part is, I think the 3, 4, 5 actually painted as well.
Okay.
So it's not going to take me that long.
3/5 of the way there.
I just need a tank war event now to justify it.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's one of the expansion books that Warlord sell. Mm-hmm. The other one that they sell that's sort of a twist on the core system is Korea. Mm. Have you tried Korea?
I haven't tried it. I've got the book. I've read through it and it looks interesting. I haven't played it, mainly because I don't have an army that I could easily port across, because I generally don't play a lot of late war stuff. So it's not like I've got a late war US or late war British army or a Soviet army that I could use. But if I did have a late war army of one of those three, it would be easy to take the core and then just port it across to a Korea army.
100%. Yeah, I've got a US army that I think might be suitable for doing that. And there is incentive to get involved with Korea as well, because I have been wanting to go to Josh's event in Cardiff, the mm-hmm. Chosen and the Frozen event. Frozen in the Chosen, which is on June the 8th. So actually that could be achievable for me this year. The bigger problem is I'm going to have to learn the nuances of how it's different. I believe the core system is very similar, isn't it?
Yeah, I believe it is. You've obviously got bigger and better tanks, and that's one of the things. I remember talking to Josh about it earlier on this year, where he said if you've got your, you know, 1940s bolt action army, World War II army, stick in a bigger tank and with a little bit of tweaking and you're pretty much there already. So it has obviously got the bigger vehicles. There are extra rules in terms of artillery and body armor, I think, and assault rifles and that sort of stuff. But the core mechanics are pretty much, well, the core mechanics are the same.
Yeah. And I heard it was a brilliant event last year. So if you are career inclined, I'd strongly recommend getting yourself down to Cardiff Firestorm Games on the 8th of June for Frozen in the Chosen. So those are the tweaks to the system, the expansion packs, if you will, that Warlord have published themselves. But there's loads of community-built ones, aren't there?
Mm-hmm.
The one that springs to mind straight away, because it sort of follows on from Korea, would be Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that springs to mind for me. I believe that one's got the rules for all the choppers in as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, so there's a Facebook group, Bolt Action Vietnam, and within that, and I can take absolutely no credit for this whatsoever, there was a rule set that was released a few years ago now called VC on the Trail, which was taking the core mechanics of Bolt Action and then putting it into Vietnam. And it's stunning. It's absolutely stunning. So if you go onto our blog, and we'll put a link in the description, we'll upload this rule set plus ones that we're going to mention in a minute. So if you are interested, you can download them from there. Or as I said, if you go onto the Bolt Action Vietnam Facebook page, you can find it there. But the guys that have written it have done an amazing job at taking the core mechanics, updating it for the weapons and the types of sort of, you know, combat and types of events and scenarios that you would have seen in Vietnam. They've made their own national army lists, for example, that reflect, you know, the US, US infantry, US Marines. You've got the Vietnamese, you've got the ANZAC, you've got the Viet Cong. It's absolutely stunning what they've done.
Yeah, and it's very cinematic. All the tables that I see
mm-hmm.
always look incredible. There's a lot of love put into those tables, I find.
Yeah. And I think the best thing for this, from my perspective, is the range of models you can now get. So Rubicon over the last year have released a number of Vietnam miniatures, both the infantry and also the vehicles, because Rubicon are making their own 28mm skirmish war game. But before that comes out, what you can obviously do is to use the Rubicon models. And there's also, you know, lots of other third-party manufacturers. And, you know, Eureka, for example, have got a fantastic range of relevant Vietnam miniatures. And it looks cool. You mentioned about the cinematic. You know, I would love to, you know, recreate the We Were Soldiers scene, you know, where you've got the choppers landing and the armoured air platoon, you know, jumping off the choppers and all that sort of stuff. Or you could go, you know, full Apocalypse Now and, you know, get down the Mekon. They just released, actually, the VC on the Trail guys released quite recently an update for it to look at riverine warfare rules.
Nice. So there's some historical expansions. We've also got an ahistorical expansion made by the community that is pretty popular, haven't we, with the Very British Civil War.
So Very British Civil War, it's not a game which is, you know, specific to Bolt Action. It is very much an alt history piece. So the premise behind the Very British Civil War is that at the end of the 1930s, Edward VIII didn't abdicate the throne because he wanted to remain married to Wallis Simpson. And this caused then a breakdown in, you know, support for the king, breakdown in the government. You then had, you know, different parties and different sort of factions and different territories within the UK all splitting off and very much kind of looking after themselves because you've effectively got a Very British Civil War going on. It's incredibly rich in terms of the lore and the history, and there's various different sort of pieces of source material out there which you can get, which just give you a lot of fluff behind it. And in terms of Bolt Action rules, there is a group that have produced a rule set where you can take across the Bolt Action rules, bolt onto it the lore with a Very British Civil War, and they give you ideas and suggestions for units that you might want to run, the different subsections and factions, for want of a better phrase, that you could take within in this. And there's some amazing models out there because it's effectively looking at interwar period stuff. So you can kind of go mad in terms of, you know, where your imagination takes you, and not just using, you know, sort of like the British kind of interwar stuff, but where you've got the socialists that are being supported by the Russians, you can then obviously introduce some, you know, some Soviet equipment. Mm-hmm. Where you've got Oswald Manley's fascists, you can, you know, again, spin it a little bit, and maybe you could bring in some, you know, some German-supported equipment. You've got, you know, ex-Spanish Civil War fighters who are then appearing in Britain, you know, to fight. You can, yeah, get crazy and get regional. So, you know, the Curno Liberation Army, the Cornwall Liberation Army, for example, you could, you know, build a bunch of miners, you know, a bunch of farmers and a bunch of you know, fishermen, for example. I've actually found a range of models where you've got pit ponies So you could have, you know, a Cornish Liberation Army, a Curno Liberation Army, cavalry unit, which is a bunch of pit ponies from the mines. So you really can go to town with this and really kind of like you let your imagination run wild.
Nice. It does look a lot of fun, to be fair. And as you say, because it's ahistorical, it does open the door to whatever you think is cool. As long as you can sort of justify it roughly with a historical argument, a what-if argument, there's very much anything goes, really, isn't it? Which I really like.
If you've got Operation Sea Lion and Gigan as well, you can look at that and get some inspiration from the units that are in there, because those sorts of units that you see in Sea Lion and Gigan would absolutely be relevant to very British Civil War.
Yeah, like the Archery Club would be a good one to include.
Yeah.
But moving back to real history,
yeah,
the one that I want to look into at some point, because I've started building myself a trench table, mm-hmm. is the World War One supplement that the community made. Do you remember who put it together?
I don't recall who put it together. So it's called Bayonet and Spade.
Yeah, and it's got everything in there, doesn't it? It's a real thick tome.
It's stunning. It's like 160 odd pages, and it's incredibly well written. So it's the Eastern sort of front, effectively. So you've got you've got your French, you've got your Belgium, you've got your Great British, you've got your Russian, your Italians, United States, Kingdom of Serbia. But then you've got things like Austria-Hungary, your Ottoman Empire, your Bulgaria, your theatre selectors from, you know, early on 1914 all the way through to 1918. It's absolutely stunning. And the guys that have put this together, or possibly even the guy that's put it together, has put so much work and time into this.
Yeah, it's interesting that they haven't. If anyone listening does know who is responsible for the World War One set, the Bayonet and Spade, please do let us know, because they really do deserve a big shout out, because they've really opened the door to a lot of very in-depth fun gaming there. And they've probably formatted it like a book as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredibly well done. You know, it's taken the rules, which are from Bolt Action, maybe tweaked it a little bit to make it a bit more relevant to World War One. You mentioned about, you know, building a trench table, and a lot of the game is not based on that idea of trench warfare. It's based on those, more open scenes that you had towards the end of the war and the start of the war, rather than the middle of the war. Or you've got raids going on and that kind of stuff. It's really, really good. The other thing that's worth mentioning as well is with War Games Atlantic releasing more and more World War One sets, you've got your Germans, you've got your French, you've got your British World War One sets. Actually, you haven't got British, have you? It's worth mentioning now, with War Games Atlantic introducing more and more World War One relevant plastic sets, that the ability to quickly and cheaply get an army on the table for this has increased massively, rather than having to use some of the really good third-party metal manufacturers that are out there.
Yeah. Obviously, we don't just have World War One, though. There are rule sets for all the way up to the modern era, aren't there?
Yes, so there's a BA modern rule set, which again, we'll put this on the blog. This is an interesting one. I've looked at this quite a bit. It's difficult. I have not played it, to be fair. So this is purely based on what I've read and looked at. I think with modern warfare, it will be difficult to include the range of, you know, weapons and support teams and that sort of stuff, because of the physical range on the battlefield that, you know, these engagements are taking place. I think it'd be difficult to show that in a bolt action skirmish platoon style. That said, the people that have put together the modern list have done a great job at running through armies and forces across many, many nations, and over in a significant period of time as well, and putting them into a style and a rule set which will be very familiar to those of us who play bolt action in the World War II sense.
Yeah, I'm less worried about the ranges, actually, because it's always been quite an abstraction. For example, the Nevelwerfer, the minimum range of that was about 1.2 kilometres.
Yeah, true.
And so the idea of, we've always sort of abstracted the range of artillery pieces in order to get them on, just because rule of cool. And so actually, I think you can probably quite easily do that with the modern stuff. It'd be interesting stuff like the anti-tank weapons. Obviously, they get very complex in the modern age. And so for me, that's the one that I think would be interesting to see ways you could adapt that, where you've got sort of like guided missiles and things. That's going to be a fascinating one to try to interact without it just becoming overpowered.
See, I think if I was going to play it, and I have got some miniatures that would be relevant for modern warfare, I would shrink it down to very much a platoon skirmish game. So I would remove the vehicles, I'd remove the artillery, anything that's kind of, you know, ordnance based was going to be off table, you know, off table artillery support, off table mortar support. Your sniper's not going to be relevant at that scale, but I'd be looking at very much squad based combat. There then comes a point, however, where you start saying, actually, is this the right rule set for it? And should we be looking at alternative rule sets?
So, I think if you did sort of 500 points, as you say, no vehicles, no high explosives, well, you could have maybe like light mortars, but very limited, and on a 3x3 table, that's probably small enough that you can do sort of the squad based, but big enough that you're not getting into those other rule sets that are probably more fitting for sort of individual combats. Mm-hmm. Brilliant. So actually the thing that we probably should have talked about when we were talking about building a new army is not only are there sort of experimental rules to change the entire game, there's also experimental rules for specific nations. And so actually if you are starting a new army and you're looking for something completely fresh, you can get these armies that aren't currently represented in Bolt Action, or maybe it's not represented to the full extent that you might expect. There are additional rules available. So BoltAltAction.com has a lot of these put together. Obviously, we'll share the ones that are discussed today as well. But I know someone just released the KNIL list, didn't they?
Yes, to go along with the new miniatures that got released, yeah. Andrew Ellaby is the person who produced the list.
Yeah, Andrew Ellaby's the one who put it together. And I believe he also put together a few other ones for Hungary and
Romania,
just sort of like additional equipment list, yeah. Didn't he? So he's put in quite a lot of work to sort of pad out these armies to give players something new and fresh to try out.
And looking on Bolt Alt Action, you've got things for, you know, Bulgaria. You've got a really interesting theatre selector, the Soviet era Sam Raiders theatre selector from Richard Humble. You've got army lists here for the likes of Croatia, Bulgaria, Denmark as well, for example. So there's some really interesting alternative lists that people in the community have made. And you see these popping up a lot on Facebook as well, where people have updated or refreshed or taken some ideas from Warlord Games material and then run with it, or corrected it in some cases as well, depending on who you listen to.
So now we've got our experimental rule set. With our experimental nation, what we could, of course, do now is try out an experimental mission, couldn't we? So you could try out one from the Bolt Action Alliance pack, which is ever popular. Because also, not only are those ones, you know, they've been playtested, a lot of them are very fun. There's also quite a lot in that pack, isn't there?
Yeah, well, obviously, now that you've got the two packs, you've got, was it 12 missions across the two packs, plus you've got the additional five, I think, from the most recent pack, which are not necessarily recommended as balanced tournament play missions, but they are still fun and playtested and enjoyable missions.
Yeah, well, anything's a tournament mission if you're brave enough.
You know what I mean.
Yeah. I know, I've just been silly. Yeah, obviously we've also got our missions that we've been putting out. So far we've put out Operation Spit and Cobra and Fire and Maneuver. So while you're on the blog checking out the experimental rule sets, you could check out one of those missions. Again, we've play tested them quite a lot, so they should be fairly well balanced. But let us know if you do find any weird quirks with certain builds that mean the mission becomes unbalanced.
Yeah, something I often do is to keep an eye on the Facebook page for events coming up, and I'll have a look at their event packs and see if they've got other missions coming up. If you go onto the WTC page, for example, you'll see the missions that are being played there. So again, there's some alternative missions. So there's lots of things out there to keep things fresh rather than just playing the same rulebook missions time and time again.
Yeah, and that's the funny thing, actually. Even if you only had one army and you just played one army for 4 years continuously, if every time you played it was a brand new mission that felt different, I think it would stay fresh, even though it's the same opponent, same armies. And the problem we have with a lot of the missions is if you play either the exact same mission every time you go down the club, or you play one that is very similar and it feels the same. And so actually going to completely new sources outside of the rulebook is a great way to keep it really fresh. Obviously, we're talking about going down the club there. One of the things that a lot of clubs do is run sort of different league events, partly because it helps sort of encourage players to come down regularly, but also it helps to bring new players in. So one of the ones that I did before COVID that I'm looking forward to getting back to at some point is an escalation league. Because even it helps you to bring your new players in, because you start with a few hundred points, let's say you start at 250. That's an achievable goal for a new player to build and paint in sort of a month, let's say. But even for your experienced players, the last time they played that small will have been a long time ago. So even for them, it's a very fresh look at the game. And then obviously you build over the weeks. And that's a great way, I find, to sort of bring people into the game, teach them it from a very easy starting point, and sort of keep it. Does, if every week you play a new points limit, it's going to keep it fresh, isn't it?
My one word of caution would be to have a think, if you're organising it, about how you manage those that drop out of the league during the course of the months and months. Because if you're playing a new round every week, invariably people are not going to be available each week. And if you find that you get 2, 3, 4 rounds in and people start dropping out because of other commitments, you need to have a think about how you would manage that with regards to the standings and the points. And do you cancel previous results against that opponent, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I think when we did it previously, we didn't really carry through results too much. And so it was like once a month we were meeting and we're playing that points limit. But the other way we did it was also we increased, I think, once a month. And so, again, if you are doing one where you are planning to carry the results through, if you start each month with a new points limit, it means that if someone can only get down for one game in the month, then they can still have a game with an opponent, get scores on the board, and then you basically just count that one result moving forward for each player, perhaps. So that's one way you can keep it going. Obviously, if you've got a really strong community of ball action players, you could just do sort of your more competitive league where it's sort of very fixed restrictions. Like, let's say it's 1,000 points every week, and each person plays each other person at once, let's say. And then at the end, you see who wins the most. And I know... over in Wales, we've got the South Wales Warlords who do that. And there's also the D-side Defenders, if you're in North Wales, who are also doing a very similar thing. And what they're doing, I think, is at the end, I think there's also a mini tournament. And I think that might be a knockout style one where basically you get seeded and then go into the mini tournament. And so actually, even if you haven't been able to attend every single one, with the tournament at the end, if you can keep that date free, I suppose it's still all to play for, isn't it? Have you done a league down at Havant?
Yeah, we did one last year. Yeah, it was to bring in new players. It was also to give established players an opportunity to play something different. We ran 600 points, and lots of the established players brought different armies for it. We played on a 4x4 table, and we weren't particularly strict on how the window, as it were, for each round to be played in. Mm-hmm. We basically said there was a 3-week window, and it was up to the players to organise when they were going to play. Obviously, we had a club night every Thursday, but we said to players, if you want to play at an alternative gaming store or if you want to play it at home, that's fine. Just submit your results and we'll sort it out. We did have a few dropouts, and that's why I was saying that we had to think creatively about what we did with those dropouts. But I think we started with 12, we ended up with 8, and everybody played everybody once of those 8, and that lasted for about 6-7 months or so.
Nice. I suppose as long as everyone's played the same number of games on your results table, then you had equal opportunity to get the points. And so just ignoring the games against the 4 dropouts.
That's essentially what we did. So we ignored the games against the dropouts. Everybody played the same amount of games. Each round was a particular mission, but not everybody played in each round because of the way that the people dropping out worked. But it did mean that everybody played, you know, if there's 8 of you, for example, everybody played 7 games, you played 7 different missions. It's just that I didn't play the same 7 missions that somebody else in the league might have played, because it depended on what round I was playing in. Some rounds I got a bye, other rounds I was playing, you know, 3 rounds in back to back.
And because obviously the rulebook missions, I know you feel strongly about some of the rulebook missions, and there's probably only about 5 of them, I imagine, you would view as balanced for competitive play. Did you go dip into other sources for the other missions?
Yeah. I think I included 6 missions from the rulebook, and then I used things like the Bolt Action Alliance missions. I used some of the missions that appear in the old Warlord Games mission pack, which they produced a couple of years ago, Timely Objectives being a good example, for example. So I think we had about 12 missions, because originally it was going to be 12 rounds. So we had about 12 missions. I think it was 6 from the original rules and then 6 others. And we ended up, say, playing 8 games over the course of the 12 rounds.
Brilliant. So the thing that I find makes the game, or keeps the game fresh, is going to a range of different tournaments. So things all the way from sort of your extremes of the Welsh Open, very friendly, very thematic, all the way up to something like World Open War, where it's very competitive, no holds barred. And I think having the diversity of tournaments, especially if you are starting to get a bit bored, trying to find a wacky tournament, someone who's running maybe a Tank Wars or an ahistorical tournament or the Korea tournament, I think that's a great way to keep the game fresh for you. Not only because you're thinking of building a new army, but also just you're playing a brand new game when you get there, aren't you?
Yeah, and I think the other way as well, and it's a bit more investment involved in terms of time and effort and money, but it's to have a look at playing at events overseas. Not talking about things like World Open War or the WTC in terms of, you know, international competitive events. I'm thinking more about going to another country's Open or going to another country's Nationals, for example, especially in Europe, where it's very easy to pretty much every major European event is played in English, or certainly English will get you through it. And it's obviously very easy and quick over in Europe to get to different countries for different events. You know, it's not like we're in America or Australia and so on, where you're traveling for hours and hours just to get to an event in the same country. So I think there are, you know, opportunities to go and play abroad, go and see what it's like overseas, because... you know, when we went to WoW, for example, and we played against other European players, what they bring to events and what they see as being a strong list or so on is often very different to what you will see in your own country. And I certainly really, really enjoyed and appreciated that experience from it.
Yeah, and it's also just getting to meet new people who, if you're going to tournaments all the time to try and keep it fresh within your own nation, you bump into the same faces all the time. And that's really nice because it means you've got sort of the regular crowd who you bump into all the time. But it is nice when there's someone new. And so when you go to these international tournaments, they're guaranteed to almost all be new to you. And so I imagine that's a huge perk of it. And as you say, for people in Britain or mainland Europe, it's not that difficult to get to another nation to play in the Nationals.
No.
And I suppose if you roll that into a holiday, so you either start or end your holiday at the tournament, then so long as you can get permission from whoever you've got on holiday with to spend 2 days gaming of the time away, mm-hmm. then actually I imagine that's a great way to sort of justify that cost. So we've covered quite a lot of ways to keep the game fresh. Obviously, we've rattled through them there. So if you want to go back to any of them in more detail, get on our blog. We'll share all the resources there.
Going back to what we talked about in the last episode, which was, is Bolt Action getting stale? And my response was, it will get stale if I choose to make it stale. And I think, you know, talking it through today and thinking about it in advance of the episode, if I am finding that, you know, Bolt Action for me is getting a bit samey, maybe trying a different army, for example, might be something that I want to do. Or maybe trying some of the official Warlord games supplements, which I, you know, haven't played much of, you know, like Tank Wars, or haven't played at all, like Korea, or diving into some of the fan-made ones that we've mentioned. All of those things will, you know, bring me back into the game if I find myself in a situation where I'm a bit like, ah, oh, so I've played this army before, I've played this mission before, I've gone to these events, you know, a lot, and I'm seeing the same people. So I think, and controversial maybe, but I think it's the individual will make it what they want to make of it.
Yeah, I think huge props to the community because they've put so much into this game to keep it fresh. And I hadn't realized just how many options there were. So really, as we said in the last one, it's the community who's keeping the game alive at the minute, it feels like, and they're doing a fantastic job of it. So I'm excited to try out some of these ones that I haven't had time for previously. I wasn't even aware of some of them before we recorded this. So well done, everyone.
And those of you that have played, for example, the British Civil War or the World War One or Vietnam or modern rule sets, let us know what you think. Or if you're inspired to get involved, so pop over to our blog. We'll put all of the packs and the army lists up there to download, and let us know how you get on if you do try them out.
Please do. Share, like, subscribe, all the usual goodness. Ta-ta for now.
Ta-ta for now, for the last time in 2023.